Hey friends, my name is Alondra and welcome to episode 6 of Let's Talk and Grow. I'm sure most of you have heard at one point in your life, or at least directed towards someone else, mostly interviews to actors, singers, about what would you tell your younger self? And sometimes the answers are simple, and sometimes you can really tell that the people that answer those questions get real emotional. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. I didn't come across this question because I was watching an interview, but I was actually just scrolling through my newsfeed and I saw a picture of me when I was about four years tops. I could have been 3 or 4 years old. And this was a picture of when I lived in Mexico. And I wrote as a caption, "I want to be this little girl's heroine." And when I wrote that caption, I got real, real, real emotional. I wrote that because I wrote that on my Let's Talk and Grow page. I have two Instagram accounts, my personal and the Let's Talk and Grow. I posted it on both. And when I was thinking about what I would tell myself as a little girl, as soon as I asked that question to myself, I told myself, I have to make this an episode because as soon as I started thinking about it and I started jotting things down about what I would tell my younger little girl, 4-year-old, 5-year-old self, because that's when I had the most pain, about 4 to 7 or 8 years old, probably 5 to 8 years old, I had a lot of unexplainable pain. Of course, I've gone through other pains now as an adult, but those were kinds of pains that I didn't have answers to. And I was just thinking about her, about that 4-year-old girl. And actually, when I was writing this episode, I don't write episodes word for word, but I write bullet points, kind of like a graphic organizer when you're in writing class in middle school or high school. And I just started crying. Before I even wrote bullet points about the things that I wanted to talk about, I was crying. And I don't know if I want to take this approach on this episode. I'm not sure. I wrote down all the things that I learned that I would tell that little girl. I just don't know if I will go to that approach. But anyway, so I'm just going to dive right in. And the first thing that I would tell myself is, and this is probably one of the most important ones, is this is your space as much as everyone else's. Right now, I feel free to take up as much space as I need. But when I was a little girl, especially after my sister was born, and my sister knows this, I'm not saying anything against my sister. It has to do more with the adults that made me feel this way. About a year ago, or perhaps even more, my uncle came to our house and he was playing some old videotapes. And the videotapes were, some of them were in Mexico, and they would come down to visit in Mexico. So they would film family members and everything. They always film some good times. But then there was some videos where, this is when we came to the States. My mom had just had my sister and we were staying with my aunt. I don't know, it feels a little hard to say this because I don't know if any cousins are listening, and I don't mean to bash any of them, I don't mean to bash them, any of them, because I'm in a better place, of course, but I just feel like it has a lot of those things have to do with what I went through as a child. And anyway, so if you're listening to this, any of my cousins, I'm not trying to bash you or your parents. I'm just trying to talk about my experiences. And rest assured that everything I'm saying has no bitterness towards anyone. It's just my experiences, and I have no bad feelings for anyone, absolutely no one, and that's it. So in the videos where my sister was born, I just feel like my life changed quite a lot when my sister was born. And like I said, it has nothing to do with my sister. I love my sister. My sister's like one of the loves of my life. I love her so much. But it's rather the adults around me at the time. It was so sad because I know that it's normal for children to feel like left out a little bit, and sometimes they get jealous and things like that. But for me, it was not the case. Like I loved my sister and I wanted to be around my sister, but they weren't like, oh no, not right now, like it's because I have to take care of your sister or things like that. It was like, move! Or like they would record my sister, and when I would try to touch her, they'd be like, get out of the way, and like, or get out of the scene. Like you could really see it in the videos. It was so terrible. Like, and like my mom wouldn't say anything. I guess it's because we were just guests in their home, and they were pretty damn mean to me. It was weird because I was that aunt, I was her goddaughter, and she used to not spoil me, but she was very nice to me. And even in Mexico, like anytime they would see me, they'd run to me and they just couldn't wait to see me. And I always felt very loved. Despite the circumstances around me, I felt loved. I felt wanted by the people around me, which was a very good feeling. But after my sister was born, it wasn't really a feeling of, oh, we have to take care of your sister now. It wasn't like that. It was like, get out the way, move. I remember my uncle was holding he was rocking my sister on the chair, and I just stood on the chair beside him, and I was just looking at my sister, and it was like, get out of the way, and they weren't even nice about it. So it was just, for me, it was like, I wasn't even, how can I say this? I wasn't even causing any danger to my sister. I wasn't even being annoying. I would just, when they would tell these things to me, I remember, because I have a lot of memories of how I felt, even like 4 or 5 years of age. I remember that it hurt, but I would stay silent. I just wouldn't say anything. This is going to be a longer point because it gave me a lot of teaching as to who I am today. Almost 90% of it. I also felt like my life dramatically changed when my mom and dad, before my sister was born, they were already in an ugly phase of their relationship. And it was a small house we lived in, so I got to see a lot of it. And when they eventually split, my mother moved in with our grandfather, and then our grandfather died a few months after. And it was a very terrifying experience for my mom because, obviously, I don't know, my mom was afraid because he was the only person there, and, well, it was his house and he died. And she was just afraid, I guess. I see a lot of people whose relatives or close ones, loved ones, die, and they're not afraid of them, rather they want to see them again. But my mother was actually quite afraid because she would remember how every morning my grandfather would wake us up, well, me to go to kinder, and he would wake up my mother up with coffee, and he would always stand by the staircase. There wasn't a door, and the way the bed was placed, it looked through the staircase. And so every time we'd go to sleep, my mom would be afraid of things like the way my grandfather would tell us goodnight or would wake us up. And she dreaded the first months of his death. And it wasn't just being afraid of in that way, but after my grandfather died, my mother wouldn't sleep because the door to the backyard broke, and my mother asked my dad if he could help her fix it. And my dad would say, when my mom would tell him that to pick us up from school, sometimes he wouldn't pick me up from school. Sometimes he would forget. When he'd remember, he'd get mad. He wouldn't pick me up. I remember people, I remember the principal, even my teacher who loved me, my kindergarten teacher in Mexico who loved me. It was embarrassing because I remember now she would say that I had such an irresponsible father. And she would say, like, I would be listening to it. She would say how I had such an irresponsible father. And there were a few times where she argued with him and would tell him that he couldn't be irresponsible like that. But anyway, I know it seems like I'm getting off track, but I'm not. There's a reason for me saying everything that I'm saying. So my dad would never come to anything, like things that we needed. Sometimes he would, but when my mom needed help with something, he wouldn't come through, or he would just wait till he remembered. And I remember my mom tried to fix the door as much as she could. It was this pretty heavy wired door, and my mom didn't really have any money to buy a new door, because for one, my mother couldn't work as much because she had two daughters, one that was 5 and one that was a newborn. I'll go more towards that point there. But so anyway, my dad never showed up. And one day my mom was doing laundry, and a guy was trying to break in, and he was running from the police, and he was breaking in people's homes. And my mom, held her up at knife point, because it wasn't a gun, it was a knife. And he told her to not scream, because he knew he had two daughters, and if she screamed or told anything to the police, he would kill not only her but kill her daughters and rape them at night because he knew that we lived alone. And my mom wouldn't sleep. My mom wouldn't sleep for days. I remember when she could, she would take us to our grandmother's house, and she would cross the border over to Calexico, California. So she would give blood. I believe it's plasma, where they pay you. And it was very little, of course, but for her, it was at least something to pay the bills. It's little in the States, but in Mexico, it's much more. And it gave her something so that she could sustain us. And I remember people telling her she needed to stop giving blood. She was looking too pale, but she didn't know what other thing to do. And after, I know that my mom was going through a lot. And I remember that my mom was going to a point where she was even going kind of crazy. Like, she would talk to herself, and I would notice people looking at her when we would walk down the street, and I would ask her, "Mom, why are you talking to yourself?" And she's like, "No, I'm not." I'm like, "Yes, everybody's looking at you. Why are you talking to yourself?" And she later told me that when she was doing these things, she was speaking to my grandfather. Like, she would ask him why he'd left and things like that. And she didn't know that she was doing this out loud, and people would just look at her. That time with my mom, it gets more traumatic than that, but that interrupts the point of this. But after we went from a point of being so close together, my mom, my sister, and I, because my mom protected us so much, to a point where we came to the States again after my mom had my sister. After my mom had my sister, she went back to Mexico. And then after my grandfather died, my aunt told my mom, she was convincing my mom to come to the States, because she told my mom that my grandfather had told her multiple times, please take her and the daughters with you. They will live much better, and it's so tough for them here, and they barely eat and things like that. And then my sister would get much better care, you know, here where she was born, rather than my mom struggling to feed us in every way possible. So we did, and I'm thankful that that happened. However, at that point, like months later after we came to the States, my mom met my stepdad, which again, I love my stepdad, but it was a very confusing time for me because I felt so lonely because at that point when my mom met my stepdad, and I don't blame her, she was young and she was going through so many things. Not super young, she was like in her 20s. 20s or early 30s, but forget the age, emotionally she was in shambles. And she was trying to, I don't know how to say this, she was just going through so many things. She finally met my stepdad and my stepdad helped her out. My stepdad always made her feel like she wasn't alone, which I'm very thankful for. But here is what was very traumatic for me, or what was very conflicting for me. Well, my mom never really spoke to me about her new relationship or anything. I just kind of went to school, and my aunt had three children, and her middle child was sometimes the little one too, but the little one, I know that he's not ill-hearted. It's just, he was just going along with it. But my middle cousin, he was so vicious to me. I remember, and not just me, my mother, but more specifically to me, like when my mom was dating him, my stepdad, and my mom wouldn't tell me things about it, the middle one would always tease me and say, "Your mom and dad aren't going back together." And then like when my mom and my stepdad would talk in the car, because we were living with my aunt, he would say, "Look what they're doing. They're probably having sex in the car." So he would taunt me these ways and tell me things like, "Your mom is with him and they're going to be it's going to be him, your sister and her, and they're going to send you back to your dad." Like a lot of these things. And I would just cry and I would tell him to stop. And he would literally laugh. I don't know what he got out of these things. I remember that I don't even know why my aunt participated in it too. She probably doesn't remember. But there were times when they would go to like McDonald's and things like that, and they'd be like, "We're just taking your sister, not you." And my mom even remembers these things. She's like, "I don't know why they would do that." Like they would, she's like, "It would make me feel so bad for you." But I don't understand why. Like I feel like my mom probably felt that because we lived with them, she really couldn't stand up for me. We lived in their home, so she felt like she really couldn't make a conflict out of it. So a lot of those things kind of make me feel like I need to disappear. Like I had to make myself invisible as a kid. Like I said, a lot of these things were about how as a child it was hard because my mom kind of emotionally detached from me, and she knows. She's like, "I just felt like," she tells me to this day, I feel like I left you alone, and she just needed a breather. And I get it, she needed a breather, but she didn't know how to go about it. Unaware, kind of disassociated from me. And I remember that I would cry when they would tell me these things, and I would throw these, not tantrums, it was like two times. One was when they were holding hands, and I threw a tantrum because my cousins were making fun of me. And I was so angry at the whole situation because no one ever spoke to me about these things. It's like I was cast to the side with no explanation. Like in my mind, I thought my parents were gonna get back together one day. Like I remember I would wish upon a star. Literally, I would see stars and I would wish that. And I remember one time I threw the biggest tantrum because my cousin was making fun of how they were having sex and how they were going to leave me. Like just the stupidest things. And I remember my stepdad had given me like $20, $50 or something. I don't know. And I remember I got so angry. I went to him and I threw all that money in his face. Like all the dollars went flying. I think he gave it to me in $1 bills. It must have not even been 20. It must have been like 10. And I remember I was so angry. I threw it in his face. Oh God, I don't know why I cry every episode. but it's a healing thing for me. And the saddest part there was my mom was so angry that I did that. And she took me to the room. And she was just like shaking me. And she was just, she was like mad. And she was telling me, you don't want me to be happy. And you're, and I was so traumatized. I didn't know what was going on. And I was just screaming. And she's like, your dad is never coming back. He left and he's not coming back. And what do you want me to do? And I remember like tears just streaming down my eyes. And I was just wanting her to love me, to talk to me. But of course, I didn't know how to phrase that. I didn't know how to phrase that. I just felt invisible. And from then on, me and my mom were no longer close. I mean, we are now, but from that moment toward a lot of years later, I mean, it took barely a few years for my mom and I to get close again. I just disassociated emotionally. I've always loved my mom. I never stopped loving my mom. But after that, I just felt like I felt invisible. I felt little, small as a child all the time. And also very shy. I just felt like I raised myself after that. I did. I just immersed myself into reading a lot, escaping a lot to my own. Luckily, of course, they're healthy escapisms, but I raised myself in a way, like, I was raised financially by my parents, but mentally, I took care of myself the best I could, and I just try to keep out of everyone's way, and I always hoped that they would get out of mine, too. It's like, if everyone is just doing what, you know, what they want with, like, no, if my mom, I just try to keep out of everyone's way, and I see pictures of this little girl, and I just want to tell you, little girl, you will take as much space now as you feel and as you need, and you will grow in your space, you will feel happy in your space. And I feel like when I grew up, I just had a sense of, like, I grew so tired of feeling so inhibited that I told myself, I'm going to do the things that I want. And I don't care if anyone tells me or makes fun of the things that I want to do. I just won't tell them, you know, and I will just shine my own way. And that's what I do. I don't tell anybody about my endeavors. I just do them. And I do the things that I love, that I want to do. And I don't explain anything to anyone. And I hope the only people that I have to explain things to are my own children, if I do have any. Another thing that I learned, that was a long one, because I know that I talked, that was the first point. The other points will be much faster, but this one, taking my own space, was something that a big one for me, because I grew up so invisible. But I do spend a lot of alone time. Luckily I've learned to love my company. I love who I am. I love being with who I am. And I love my mind. I love my soul. And therefore, it makes me feel much better to take the space that I need and to feel unapologetic about it. The second thing that I would tell my little girl self is, parents do the best they could with the resources they had. Like I said, there was a lot of things that I felt at that time my mom could have done better, but she was younger and she's learning along the way. I feel that a lot of times, even when we're children, we forget that parents are learning along the way, like you are. They know a little bit better because they're older. But when you're their age, you realize you don't know everything. And people go about things different ways. Even when they're well-intentioned, they can make a mistake. So I would tell that to my little girl self, at least to give her some comfort, to know that. I know probably mom isn't what you wish she would be for you right now, but she'll come around. And you will too. You will understand that She's just young. The other thing I learned is to stop dissecting all traumas and negative things into making the assumption that people are bad. I mean, of course, there's traumas where people have done things that absolutely make them bad people to this day. Nevertheless, I feel that for me to further dissect into the trauma, and I'm not repressing what I feel. I'm very much aware of what I feel. I talk about it to myself. I dissect why I am the way I am, but I don't dwell in it to take it as an excuse. You know, I'm like, okay, well, I know that this person grew. They're not perfect, and I never will be. Even as much as I feel like, oh, maybe I'm more self-aware than they are at their age, I try not to be ego-driven and realize that even as a mother or even as a human being, I'm going to do mistakes, and I know that I will impact someone, not only positive, but even negative, even if it's in a little thing. I know that sometimes my sister tells me, you know, like that thing you said once, it really shaped me in this way, and sometimes I overthink this, and I am like, you know, I'm sorry. I apologize to her. I'm like, when I said that, I didn't mean it like that, but I understand what you're saying. I just feel like I don't like to do, I don't dwell, because I feel like I'm trying, when I just think about how people's actions shape me, I don't want to be the person that takes it as an excuse to be an emotional wreck, because I know that my emotional health, my mental health, is ultimately just up to me. No matter what anyone does to you emotionally, you're the one who is always responsible for fixing it. We always have traumatic and sad experiences that happen to us because they are there to shape us. They are there to shape us and build our character. But we decide with our attitudes how we let that shape us, whether it be for the better or for the worse. So for me, I do empathize with people explaining themselves. I do appreciate that. Like, sometimes it's hard sometimes to have closure with things when you've never had an explanation. But when you do, it is actually nice. I empathize when people take their time to explain themselves and their intentions. And it is a healer. But you won't always get that closure from a lot of people. So I feel like out of self-love, I don't wish to stall my growth and in resentment and things like that, because I know that if I'm waiting for those things, I'm only stalling my growth. A fourth thing I've learned is never allow anyone to make you feel crazy for having a question. Especially even in a loving relationship, where sometimes even just for having a simple question and not even like in a mad way, I never question things in a mad way. I always do so respectfully, and I explain why I have a question. But if for having a question someone lashes out at you, or you know, goes on and insults you, disrespects you, please, little me, as you're growing up, do not make the mistake of thinking, oh my god, they really lashed out. That must be because they really must mean it. You know, they really must mean what they say. Like, that you're crazy, you must have really done something wrong, like you must have crossed the line by asking a question. One, you should never be disrespected for having a question, because it's your right, especially if you've been given reasons to believe before something. You have a right to ask a question, especially in a loving relationship. You have every right to feel safe and secure in asking something and not being afraid that something's going to happen. So do not feel like the fact that someone lashed out at you when you ask something respectfully means that you're the one that crossed the line, because girl, people manipulate you that way. And there's a lot of times where that happened to me, and then months passed and I realized that I was right all along, And the reason why the person insulted me was because they couldn't handle the anxiety that they were going through out of the question. So never allow anyone to make you feel inferior, stupid, or like you're crazy because you have a question. This also ties with something that a great teacher of mine, Mr. Lowndes, taught me, which was to always ask questions. Always ask questions. And I'm not going to get into that because that's for some other episode, but thank you for always teaching me to ask questions. When I don't understand a word, when I don't understand an idea, I never go along with, I don't just nod and say yes. If I don't understand something, I ask. Even if, like, because I know that sometimes we don't ask questions sometimes. And we see an unfamiliar word, an unfamiliar thing, an unfamiliar situation, and we just like, okay, and hope for the best. But always ask questions. Fifth thing I learned, I think it's the fifth one, is you never lose in life. Everything is a learning experience for your soul. Everything, the good and the bad, everything is a learning experience. Even the most traumatic things, like I said, you could either use them to shape you or use those experiences to destroy you. And this applies to, yes, every situation, the worst of situations. You decide how you let this shape you. If something traumatic happened to you, be a catalyst to speak against those things, to help others. Everything is a learning experience for your soul. Everything. You never lose, even when things don't go right for you. You never lose. Never lose. You only gain experience for your soul. Six, a mindful life feels like living an intense gratitude. It goes hand in hand. I would tell my younger self, I started being very mindful and full of gratitude. And I said this in a previous episode called Gratitude. How gratitude really shaped my life. But I would tell my younger self, and I know my younger self would understand because I've always been a very intense person, always very deep in thought and very deep in feeling. But I'd like to tell her that being mindful is such a gift. Mindful of how you do things, mindful of how you move, doing things slowly, and it's a joy. Being mindful is so beautiful because you dive into the emotions of being able to feel, and you can feel every part of your body. You can feel every sip of water or of a drink. You just kind of naturally sometimes start getting thankful for it. So that's why I feel that mindfulness gives intense gratitude. Not all the time, but you can incorporate it. And I feel that I learned gratitude at a young age. Not that young, like 5, 4, no, but young, like 15, 16, which I think is young for most when they start practicing those kind of things. But mixing those two, oh my goodness, it's an amazing experience. And I encourage all of you listeners that to practice mindfulness with gratitude. And it's one of those things that is a great medicine for every day. Both the good days where you feel, when you practice mindfulness and gratefulness together, oh my god, your day's, I don't know how to say this, boomtastic. I don't know, it's just amazing. But it's also amazing medicine in the bad days. It really helps. The seventh, I don't know if I'm on the sixth, seventh. I think I'm on the seventh. The leaps that you're afraid to take usually end up being the most enriching experiences. In 2018, I made a bold decision of going to Mexico. And yes, I was going through, that decision came out of me going through intense, horrible, horrible storms. And some people would be like, why Mexico? Because obviously, here's the thing, where I lived in Mexico was a place of high crime. It was like the worst part of the city. And I didn't really choose to live in that part of the city. It was just because my family members are from that part. So I just kind of naturally cocooned in that area. But even though it was like that, it really humbled me more. I didn't go there for that reason. It started for another reason, which I won't share in this episode, or I don't know if I will share this eventually, but on the surface, very briefly, I will say that it was a very humbling experience. It really helped me grow. It made me more assertive too, just as an individual. I mean, I remember going into buses. I mean, I don't even use the bus here in the States because I'm always afraid that it's going to leave me somewhere and I'm not gonna know how to get back. I do like those kind of things, like using buses and things like things that other people, I don't know, some people are like, I would never get into a bus, or they would rather not go somewhere because they would never be caught dead in a bus. But I do, I like those kind of experiences. I like jumping into things, and I like, well, here's the thing. Like I said, I never get in, I've been in the bus here, but I don't, because I'm always afraid of where I'm going to end up, like that I just wait for the bus on the wrong side of the road and I end up somewhere that I wasn't supposed to get to, and that just stresses me out. But if I knew how, I would. I don't mind. I like those kind of things. But in Mexico, I mean, I did that a month in. I jumped on the bus and it took me to my job. I worked in Mexico and it would take me to, it was so far from where I lived, like to the opposite side of town almost. And it was hard sometimes. And I lived in a house that had a lot of things that didn't work, like the plumbing didn't work. I didn't have a washing machine and I would wash by hand. I mean, for any of you who've never been to Mexico, that's not the general experience. I mean, I know sometimes people see it as a third world country where there's barely any good technology. That's not the case. It just happens to be that I was in a place where first I was living with a cousin, but then I was like, you know what? I need to be on my own. And I was for a few months. And it was kind of hard for me, like getting a washing machine and things like that, because I didn't really have any time off ever. I didn't have Wi-Fi at my own home. I didn't have Wi-Fi. I didn't know how to contact the people to get me like a, I was gonna say in Spanish, a lavadora, but a washing machine. So I just washed by hand. It was different. It certainly was different. I learned to cook more things for myself. I learned to jump and go places on my own where I didn't know much. That's always an experience that I'm very proud of, because even though it was hard, it was hard both phys it was hard physically. It was very hard physically. Although it was hard physically, emotionally, and mentally, because the part where I lived at first with my cousin, it was an area of high crime. And I had to walk sometimes in dark streets and alleys. And it was very scary because there was a lot of people like that would rob you. And I don't know how I got so lucky that it never happened to me. That people would get jumped, people would get how do you call assaulted? I don't know what it's called when people like they rob you of your money and stuff. I'm just gonna say they rob you. And sometimes they kill you. And the reason I came back though is because I don't know why one day. Well, okay, never mind. This is gonna be for the other episode. But it was a very good experience. Even through the bad things that happened, which weren't many, but a lot of it was so much growth. And it changed my life. It changed my life. I don't know how I would be if I hadn't done that. And I was so scared for so many. The day I did it, I cried. I left on a Greyhound bus because Greyhound buses go to Mexico to go straight to Mexico sometimes. And I remember on my way there, I was crying because I love my mom a lot. I love my sister a lot. I love my dogs a lot. I love my stepdad a lot. I have a very tight-knit family, which we can all depend on one another. I don't regret it. It was one of the most, I think it was a catalyst moment in my life. A catalyst moment. 8, 9, I don't remember where I'm at. The next thing I would tell little Alondra is, you are what you believe. It doesn't matter what anybody believes. If you believe you're dumb, then that's what you are. I mean, I'm not really saying you're dumb, but Alondra, if you believe you're dumb, in your head, there's nothing else you're going to be but dumb. That's what you think in your head. That's the only place where you're going to be at. If you think you're wonderful, it doesn't matter how many people think you're not. You can do anything because you believe you're wonderful. I see a lot of times where a lot of miracles, in quotation marks, happen because everyone can be laughing at you, but that person believed in themselves so much because they are what they believe. And they're like, I know people don't see me right now, but I know that I'm capable. You are what you believe. You are what you believe. And that is a very true thing. No one can, if you are firm about what you believe, about who you believe you are, no one can take that away from you, especially if those are beautiful things. That's why your mind is very powerful. I wish I could tell that to my younger self. You are what you believe. And I probably had heard that before, but it's sometimes as adolescents, we don't really take those words seriously. And we should. 10th, 11th, I'm not sure. Respect yourself. Respect yourself. And the words you say to yourself, which kind of links to the previous one. Believing beautiful things about yourself is part of the respect that you have for yourself. And even when you think that you made a mistake, well, have enough respect for yourself to be humble about it, to apologize, and to be better. You do a disservice to yourself when you don't acknowledge the bad as well as the good. But you don't have to dwell on, oh, I'm a horrible person. No. Respect yourself enough to get back up and be better. 12, I believe. You might feel despair in the stigmas of what people call loneliness, but you are your bestest friend. This is probably more for me than for other people because I really did find, I do find a good friend in myself. I love being by myself. I know that a lot of times, well, now with COVID, a lot of people, when it initially started and people were quarantining more than they are now, and people were more isolated, a lot of people who, especially those who are very social, didn't know how to be with themselves. They would say they were lonely, but in some cases, I realized that for some, I mean, I'm not saying for everybody, for some, surely for some who felt this way was because they don't know how to be with themselves. And let me repeat. For some, because I know that there are some that felt like this because family members were dying and that sort of thing. But there's people who really don't know how to be with themselves or who constantly feel that they have to have others' company to feel whole or who need noise, the outside noise all the time, or else they feel in distress in their own company. And it was during that time that I realized even more how grateful I was to have myself. I like my company because I like the way I think. I like my thoughts. I like my heart. I really enjoy, I'm so blessed because I never thought that I would feel this way as a child, but I feel like I've created this beautiful place within my soul. Where I'm so happy with it. And I feel that even like when everyone's gone, of course, sometimes I like to be with other people. I do. And it's not good to be in overwhelming solitude all the time. That does get lonely and we need each other. But it's very beautiful to love what's in your heart, mind, and soul when everything else is silent. To find a beautiful refuge in yourself. It is. It's wonderful. I'm so blessed because I never thought I would feel this way about myself when I was younger. Sometimes when I remember when I would eat alone at lunch in high school, I remember that it didn't hurt to be alone sometimes because I'm like, well, I'm doing homework and I like how I'm spending my time and I like what I'm... I would go to the library sometimes. I like that. I did like going to the library a lot of times. But then sometimes I would get sad and I would get lonely. Or sometimes it wasn't so much that I felt sad because I was alone, but it was more like I felt like I had to be sad because I was alone. And there's times where when I was an adult, I'm like, no, if something doesn't resonate with me or if I don't feel the need to be surrounded by people, it's okay to be by myself. And now I spend a lot of time by myself. A lot of time by myself. And I crave it sometimes. I crave it. I can't wait to be alone sometimes. I can't wait to just be in my thoughts, to think. I mean, the fact that I'm able to have the time to think and to build a good home within my soul is what even allows me to make a podcast, because I have so many beautiful thoughts that I feel that I can share with others, that I can share with people, beautiful messages that I feel I can share because of it. So I don't hate my loneliness, because it's not loneliness, because I feel that the soul is a beautiful company. I don't feel sad in solitude. I honestly sometimes even feel my best in solitude, because I'm allowed to think more. I'm allowed to reflect on the love that I have for those around me. Like, I love being with my loved ones, but I love taking a step back and reflecting on it. I don't know, I'm a very reflective person. So being by myself is a gift for me. And the last thing is, higher energy always wins. I'll say that again. Higher energy always wins. And I'm not really going to explain that one, because it applies to everything in life. Higher energy always wins. Anyway, that's all that I have for you guys today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Those are the things that I would tell myself as a little girl, but I'm pretty sure there's a million things more that I've just learned in general as a human being. Not precisely things that I would go and tell her back then, but things that I keep learning every day that are resonant to me now, that are probably not something that had to do with a little girl, but are important as well. I just want to say, dear little me, no one person that wants to make you feel inferior is ever superior to you. And I hope that I can make you proud. I want and I will be your heroine. When I was looking at those pictures of myself, those pictures of myself as a little kid before I posted on Instagram and before I started writing this episode, and when I wrote that quote, I want to be this little girl's heroine, I just thought about you, little me. I thought about you and all your moments of uncertainty, all your confused moments. And I did cry a lot. I'm very sensitive, listeners. If you're listening, friends, I am very sensitive. But I don't take that as a negative thing. I embrace that this is who I am. And I hope you don't mind. But I only wish to go back to you and give you a huge hug. And let you know, as so many people want to tell their younger selves, it's going to be okay. It is. And if I was back with you in time, I would tell you, girl, you have no idea. You have no idea how self-aware you're going to be, how more you're going to feel your soul grow, how much more you're going to feel growth mentally, and you're going to feel so proud of yourself. And I'm not even halfway through our life. I'm not even halfway through our life. And I just can't wait to be your heroine. I'm so happy where I am right now. Emotionally, mentally, spiritually. That it makes me so haplessly anxious, so looking forward to what our 50-year-old self is going to say. Oh, God. I don't know if I'll make it to 50, but I don't know if we'll make it to 50. I don't know when our life will end, but I will work to always be your heroine and to make little me, to make you so proud of our existence and to know that our life was so worth it. I love you so much. I do. I feel it in the way that it just gets to me, because I know what my little self went through. I know what you went through. And I'm so proud of you. Anyway, listeners, friends, loved ones who are listening to this, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being there, the people that continue to listen, the people that message me about the episodes. Thank you so much. I love you guys, and I can't wait to be with you next episode. And I don't know if you guys mind. I know that I feel like I've cried nearly every episode. Not as much as this time, or I don't know. I don't want to apologize for it because that's how I am. But I just want to let you know, I mean, I don't cry every episode. There's been like two that I haven't. But I just really, I really do get into my deeper self a lot. And I do like to feel, I do not see the problem in feeling as much as I can. I mean, I'm a human living an experience, and I live mindfully. I live it mindfully. I live it proudly. And just as much as sad things can hurt, so much can I also dwell on the beautiful things that I've learned, and I love that. I cry for sad things and I cry for beautiful things. And I won't apologize, but I'll just say I hope you don't mind. Thank you so much for listening. And I can't wait to be with you guys next episode. Goodbye.